Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Last week, we left off at KDE CLI Tools. This week, we're diving back in with KDE Dev Scripts. KDE Dev Scripts are scripts and setting files useful during the development of KDE software. So this is going to be something that you'll probably only look at if you're making a KDE application, which sounds like fun. I've never done it, but it does seem like a nice thing to try because Qt is really fun to develop for, that I have done. And KDE adds a bunch of cool new features to Qt, so it's kind of cool. Okay, there are a bunch of scripts in this package, so I'm not sure what the best way of attacking them all are going to be, because while some of them are vaguely interesting, not all of them are necessarily probably worth discussing in great detail. Let's find out just how many there are by doing a grep for user bin in var log packages KDE dev scripts, and then piping that through WC word count, except we're going to word count the lines, dash L, not the words. And it looks like there are a grand total of 61 scripts. That's a lot. I mean, that's a whole podcast. So I'm definitely not going to go through all of these, I don't think, line by line, by any means. Let's see. There's the add debug script. Let's look at what that is. It modifies a makefile in the current directory and optionally subdirectories to add the debug info, that's dash G3, optionally remove optimizations, that's the dash capital O 1 through 9, and then optionally remove dndebug and dnd underscore debug flags. I don't think I have that much to say about it beyond what it says about itself. So that's what that script does, and I think it probably sets a good tone for the kind of the kind of commands we're going to encounter here. These are little utilitarian scripts that just add handy little features to development processes, whether it's building software or modifying a makefile so that you can then build the software and so on. So for instance, build-progress does a status message in the title bar of console or xterm or whatever your terminal is. It prints a progress report on where your build process is in the title bar of your terminal. So that's kind of handy. You can imagine how that would be useful to someone. There's a C++ copy class and file, C++ rename class and file. That's a common IDE function, except outside of an IDE in this case, there's a script for it to either copy a class and the classes are when you're developing object-oriented applications, you generally find that your classes are also, like, the name of your file is also the class that it contains. And so if you want to copy that class and file, then you can use the C++ copy class and file. If you want to rename it, so sort of you're maybe almost refactoring your application, C++ rename class and file. Cheat make is a script to lie to your compiler. This is a little bit of a dangerous one, I guess, in a way, because you might be hiding from your compiler the fact that something changed, and you have to sort of really know what you're doing when you do something like that. But you can do that. You can tell it to ignore the change in such and such a file. And the reason that is important is because when you're building something really, really big, like all of KDE, which I have tried to do before, and I don't think I've ever gotten through it successfully. It's just such a big, monumental thing to build that, you know, if you change like a comment in a file, that really doesn't affect anything, or maybe you change something else in a file, and you know, because you're a really good developer, and you know these things, and you know that it doesn't affect anything, then you can just, you know, like if by changing it, you might force naturally your build system will detect that change and rebuild everything that thing potentially affects. But if you know better, then you can lie to it and ignore a change so that you don't have to spend time rebuilding lots of components that you know deep down weren't actually affected by the change. It is a rainy day here in New Zealand, and I have to admit that I have obtained coffee early, so I will totally understand if you have to go get coffee early, because I certainly did, and I don't regret it one bit. And it's very good. It's a good pot of coffee this time around. Okay, let's talk about maybe, okay, color SVN, create CVS ignore, create make file, create make file. That actually sounds kind of interesting. But there's a bunch of SVN and CVS utility scripts that I don't feel are probably all that important to talk about. There may be some KDE software that still uses SVN and CVS. I don't remember seeing any off the top of my head. But I guess it could still exist. I mean, this is KDE 25th Anniversary Edition or whatever they were calling it. So you wouldn't think, it's pretty recent, so you wouldn't think that those scripts would still exist if there wasn't some cause for them. But anyway, I'm not going to talk about them. So there's create makefile.in and makefile in a directory containing a makefile.am saves time compared to rerunning configuration completely. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that could be really useful, actually, if you're an AutoTools user. This skips some of the laborious, you know, nuking your environment and then auto conf, auto recon, auto make -add -missing, all that other stuff that you sometimes find yourself doing over and over again. That could be really useful. So create make file or create make files, plural. And then there's create SVN ignore, which, as I said, I'm not going to talk about. There's CVS clean, CVS add current dir, CVS backport. Lots of CVS utility scripts. Like, what's that? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. So at least 10, maybe 12. Okay. CXX metric. Let's find out what that is. I don't remember what this one is. Must have not even looked at it. This simple source metrics for C++. I didn't look at that. This is a Perl script, and presumably it's giving you metrics about a project that has a mixture of C++ and then something else. So it appears to be, from a quick glance, just kind of tallying up how much C++ there is within a project. Draw lib dependencies is an interesting one. It does require graph viz, so I didn't run it, but it is an application to visualize the dependencies of a shared object, a library, or a binary executable. It simply shows you all of the things that requires to run on a system, which can be useful. It's a nice visual aid, I think. And you do see this kind of thing in the Qt docs. You see little visual representations of inheritance of different classes. So it's kind of, you know, in a way it's similar to that, although it's not talking about classes and things. It's talking about binaries and libraries. Yeah, and then there's a bunch of other helper scripts, which, you know, you just keep going on and on, but a lot of them are just so niche, and their names sort of describe what they do. Extend dmalloc, extract adder, extract rc, find missing crystal. Okay, that one, okay, I'll admit, that one is not necessarily self-evident. It's a small script to look at crystal icons and see which ones are the same as KDE Classic / High Color. There are scripts here that I think are outdated for the current iteration of KDE, so things like KDE kill all, that sounds useful, and yet if you look at the code, it's calling KDE init 4, whereas I'm pretty sure, I guess I should just make sure which KDE init, or what is it, KDE init, or K init? No, KDE init, because K init would be Kerberos. KDE init 5 is the current iteration of that command, so a helper script that calls KDE init 4 doesn't seem super useful. There's a translation file here called KDE, what is it called? KDE link, or KDELNK2 desktop.py, which kind of intrigued me. I looked at it, and it's a very, very short Python script that apparently takes a file ending in .kdelnk, and I guess it must translate it into a .desktop file, which I don't know how that's done. I don't understand what I'm looking at the code, and it's literally like 15 lines of code. So it's using something, some module somewhere to apparently transform this into a .desktop file, which I kind of assume, I mean, it looks to me like it is literally just renaming a file. So I don't know what .kdelnk is. It may be some kind of intermediate file stage from KDE to .desktop, or could it possibly be, I don't know, like a deprecated thing from like way back before .desktop files even existed? I don't know. So that's a mystery to me. I wasn't really able to find. I did a search on my system first for any mention of KDE .kdelnk and found nothing. And then I did a quick internet search and wasn't coming up with anything super obvious that seemed to tell me what KDE-LNK was. So if you've been a user of KDE for a long time and know what that is, let me know. If you are alternately a KDE developer and know exactly what that is, feel free to let me know as well. I am kind of interested in that, and I really don't know what it is. But, you know, I didn't come to KDE until really well after, well, what is it, like 2000 and whatever year the KDE 4 reveal was held, which I've cited on this show before. It's in like the archives, 2006 maybe, 2008. No, it has to be 2008, which actually doesn't sound all that late in my Linux career. I keep in my head, I feel like I, although, you know, I wasn't a full-time KDE user even then. I really ran Fluxbox mostly with KDE apps. Okay, so then there's KDE mangen.pl, which, as you can imagine, is a Perl script that takes a KDE app and generates a man page for it. So that seems really, really useful. I think that automated documentation is better than no documentation. Let's put it that way. I do think it's a really important thing to have available. Even though, you know, in the ideal world, you would have just actual humans writing documentation in a clear and concise and friendly way. But that's just not always possible. What we want and what we have access to are not the same thing sometimes. And then there is Optimize Graphics. That seems like a useful script. And it is a wrapper around PNG, what is it, OptiPNG, ADVDef, I don't know that one, and then PNG Out, I don't think I know that one either, to be honest, but OptiPNG is nice. There are applications out there that claim to optimize your graphics in one way or another. Usually, I mean, it's generally for size. I've had mixed results with them, and I guess I probably should use them more, honestly. And I just to test them out more, to see the results. In fact, you know, I'm making a mental note to start doing that. There's some for PNG, there's some for JPEG, and so on. I mean, honestly, at this point in time, it really just makes sense to use WebP. I mean, it's a really nice format, just like Opus. You know, it just really does reduce those file sizes, and I just don't have really any complaints about the results. So WebP, Opus, those are really great, but in absence of those, because not everything accepts WebP still for some reason. So sometimes OptiPNG or whatever the one for JPEG that I'm thinking of is, or maybe ADVDef, although I don't know what that is. Some of these little helper applications that just kind of cut out some of those, you know, cut down the color space and optimize what kind of data your file actually contains, can be kind of nice to mess around with. And this is a front end for those scripts. I'm not sure how generally useful it is. You'd have to have all of those things installed, obviously, which they don't necessarily, I mean, they don't come with Slackware as far as I know. So the script itself is not very useful without additional installs, but sometimes they can be useful. So don't forget that those exist if you're ever trying to really, really optimize what you're uploading to the internet, which sometimes is quite useful to do because the internet is a really big and bloated place now, and sometimes it's just nice to really optimize what you're putting on there, especially when it doesn't have to be an enormous graphical file for, you know, just for some little bit of information. So I really do appreciate it. Well, I've appreciated it in the past. Nowadays, I don't care. I'm on Fiber, but that is a very recent development in my life, and it is something that I'm aware that a lot of people do not have. I kind of just lucked out into the fact that my region got fiber. But you know, there are times that I know I'm going to care again, and so optimizing graphics for things that you are sending across a network with bandwidth requirements or restrictions is a hugely, hugely useful thing to do. So optimize graphics. If not the script, then at least adopt the spirit. And then there's a bunch more SVN stuff. So you had the CVS utility scripts. Now here at the end, you've got SVN clean, SVN back port, SVN change since, SVN forward port, just all kinds of things. So it goes on and on and on. Now, that's, you know, probably useful, and I just don't know how often you're going to run into SVN anymore these days. I certainly don't interact with it in real life, hardly ever, and so I'm not really interested in the scripts. Now there is an interesting script called Uncrustify KF5, which is KDE Framework 5. And this applies the KF5 Qt or a custom coding style to all C, CPP, and header files in and below the current directory. I don't know, once again, I don't know how useful a script this is. I don't know how not useful it is. But, I mean, I'm just saying it may not be all that useful because, I mean, you could just run Uncrustify. But I'm going to say that sometimes looking through these scripts and applications and so on, there's value in, I mean, I'm sure, you know, I'm not saying that this isn't a useful script. This could be a very useful script. I'm just saying it made me think that sometimes just looking at these things is interesting because you find out about stuff that you didn't know. For instance, Uncrustify. I'd never heard of Uncrustify before, I don't think. And I looked it up because this Uncrustify KF5 requires Uncrustify, which is found at github.com/uncrustify. So going over to github.com/uncrustify, Uncrustify is kind of cool. It reveals that this is a Python module. I think from what I'm reading, it seems to extend CMake itself, but I guess it probably is also vaguely standalone. I'm not sure. I haven't tried it yet. But the interesting thing about it is that it you know, it's meant to beautify code for C, C++, C#, Objective-C, D, Java, Pawn, and Vala. So, I mean, that's a pretty good list of programming languages. I'm looking at Java here. And, you know, it's kind of funny to use a Python module for CMake to beautify your source code for Java. That's a long way around beautifying Java code, probably. And to be fair, I probably won't use this anytime soon. I have NetBeans for keeping me honest about sort of the structure of my code. So I probably won't really use this. But it's really neat to see this kind of thing, to see that it exists, to potentially beautify someone else's code sometimes. So sometimes that's useful in itself. And yeah, so Uncrustify, check it out if you write in any of these programming languages, because this might be an interesting way to sort of just touch up your code just here and there, just beautify it a little bit. I mean, you might not like it. It might be too extreme, and it might put the curly braces on a line that you don't want them on, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting to realize that such a thing exists. WC grep is I find it deceptive. I thought WC grep meant, okay, we're going to do a word count and a grep, which I guess reasonably that would probably be grep WC or something. But I thought it was going to be some kind of handy combination of a grep command and a word count, almost as if you were like finding the number of occurrences of something or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, it's not what it is. It's working copy grep. It's actually geared toward SVN, but it's actually really useful for just kind of a lazy grep through all of the files. So for instance, let's say you wanted to find the occurrences of dolphin, the word dolphin, in var log packages. You don't want to have to specify the file. You just want it to look in var log packages and find all of the files and all of the occurrences within each of those files of the word dolphin. WC grep dolphin, var log packages, and there are all the results. Now, that's probably not the most useful example, because after all, that all the files are in one directory, but you can get a lot. It can be even more useful if you do, I don't know, WC grep dolphin user share, or rather slash USR, because that will descend all of the subdirectories within user. So it'll go into share, it'll go into local, it'll go into include, and so on, and just grep through your whole a whole file system, really. And that is useful. I mean, it once again, not that big of a deal. You could just do a find in slash USR or slash USR and then dash type F and then pipe that to parallel, maybe to grep for dolphin or penguin or, you know, whatever you're grepping for, and you'll get all the same results functionally. And with parallel, it'll probably even happen faster, to be honest. But what I'm trying to get to is that these are helper scripts. These are just meant to be convenience scripts that reduce your typing. And if you don't want to have to do the find command and piping it to a parallel and all the other typing that entails, then you have WC grep. That's what a helper script is supposed to do for you. It's supposed to make things just a little bit easier. And that's kind of it. I mean, it's not literally it, because I've skipped over a bunch of different files, but as I've already explained, I don't think that it's going to be useful to literally go through all of these scripts one by one in the manner that I have in other packages. So that's the KDE dev scripts, but it's not the KDE dev utilities. The package KDE dev utils is a collection, and I should say a small collection because there's only two things in it, of little useful utilities for people programming in Qt or KDE using Qt extensions. And there's always that weird sort of differentiation between Qt and KDE, because they're so very close and then also not close at all. So, well, they are actually pretty close. But I mean, KDE extends Qt, essentially. I think you could say that fairly. So if you're using Qt and then you decide to use a KDE library, then this could potentially be useful to you. And the first one that exists is kpartloader. I think I've kind of talked about this before, the concept of parts in KDE. You know, KDE and lots of programming really is quite modular, but KDE has this really cool thing where something like the Kate editor, for instance, it is so modular that other applications like Kwrite borrow parts of it in order to make your life simpler as a user or a developer. But for instance, the really simple example, I guess, would be if you want a text, a very robust text entry box, not just a field, but like a document, then you might use Kate part so that you have all of the much of the functionality of the rich functionality of the Kate text editor, rather than just a raw text entry widget from the Qt library. Which, I mean, Qt's text editor is relatively robust if you compare it to other text entry boxes, but still the process of managing text is surprisingly complex in programming. I mean, not super complex, but complex enough. You know, a lot of the things that you kind of take for granted in a really basic text editor, just they aren't there. So if you want something with some of the really basic assumptions accounted for, then Kate part is a really great way to do that. But how do you see what Kate part is exactly without sort of opening up Kate and just kind of trying to differentiate in your sort of by inference what the Kate part is versus what the extra stuff is? It can be rather difficult. So the parts of KDE framework are stored in userlib64/cute5/plugins/kf5, that's KDE framework 5, /parts. And if you look in that path, which I'll do right now, ls /usr/lib64/cute5/plugins/kf5/parts, there's quite a few parts there. There's arc part, so that's for the archiving. There's Cantor part. I forget what Cantor is. I'm sure we looked at it already. Dolphin part. Dragon part. That's media playing stuff. FS view part, probably a file system view. GV part. Kate part. K font view part, that's cool. KHTML adapter part, KHTML image part, KHTML, of course, being the library, the system upon which, I mean, that became, really, it was forked and it became what you now know as WebKit. KHTML part, KIG part, KImage editor part, that's cool. KJava applet viewer part, no part. KM plot part, K multi part. The list goes on. I mean, not super, super long. I covered most of them, but there are a lot there. You want to see them? K part loader, and then the path, which is again /user/lib64/cute5/plugins/kf5/parts, and then some part. So in this case, I'll just do katepart.so, because that's what's listed here. And you open up a window labeled kpart loader, but I mean, really, in many ways, I guess if you want to see what kpart loader looks like without anything, just do kpart loader foo, and you get an error, but it still does open up a window labeled kpart loader. So that's the natural form of kpart loader. Not a whole lot. It's literally an empty window. Do that again with something valid like kpart, and you see the substance of Kate part. You see exactly what that entails, and it's a lot. There's a file menu, there's an edit menu, a view, bookmarks, tools, settings, help, and a big document sized, you know, however big you've got the window, text field that you can, that you could in theory use to compose text in, and then a bunch of other things down at the bottom, like a status bar, or I guess you could call it a status bar, you know, it sets whether you're using tabs or spaces and how many spaces of each and what character encoding you're using and so on. All of the things that you could possibly really want out of a text editor, and a little bit more, honestly. Now, this isn't a functional, like, application. You haven't just written a new text editor. Like, this isn't going to work for you. This isn't a great new way to run Kate. It's just you're looking at the widgets involved that it provides you, and you can do that with other things as well. Like I say, there, as long as it's listed in the parts of user lib64/cute5/plugins/kf5/parts, then you can look at it with kpart viewer. Again, it's not going to be super functional. Don't expect it to, like, do a whole bunch of stuff for you, but it does show you what you're getting when you use it. So dolphin part opens up essentially a dolphin window within kpart viewer, so you can see all the different parts of dolphin, and it's kind of actually interesting to look at, just because it does give you a sense of, like, when an application is delivering functionality to you within KDE, what part is modularized so that anyone can use it, and what part, what widgets and what functionality is specific to that one application developer's version of that application. And it's, I mean, the other easy way to do that for certain things is to look at two applications that happen to use the same parts. So you might look at Kate and Kwrite, for instance, and kind of try to find the differentiation between those two applications by just kind of comparing them and seeing what one has that the other doesn't. But the more literal way is to use kpart viewer. It's a fascinating study in kind of the structure of KDE. Okay, the next one is KUI viewer. KUI viewer is a way to load a UI design without compiling your entire application. There are design files and design structures to to create the interfaces that we use in KDE. And if you don't want to, especially as a developer, you don't want to build your entire application just to make sure that your design looks as you would expect. So KUI Viewer can help with that. I've never used it, so I can't say for sure, you know, how much compiling is involved. I mean, presumably you have to have some KDE compiled because otherwise the widgets wouldn't be able to render probably. So I don't know how much, you know, what stage of development you have to be at in order for that to be useful, but that's what that is, KUI Viewer. Okay, so next up is the KDE GTK config helper. Or module, I guess you could say, because there's no executables here. There is, in user share, there's a KCM GTK module. So that again, KCM is KDE configuration module. That's what KCM stands for. And so the KDE config module, GTK module, is going to be viewable, as you've probably come to expect now, in system settings, because that's typically where those are located. And specifically, you can go to appearance. Appearance is the place that sort of controls most of the look of what you've got in KDE. And there is a little button down in the right. So if you go to appearance, and then I guess, what is it? Appearance. I have to go back, actually, because now I'm too filtered. So let's go back. Okay, appearance, and then, yeah, application style, and then in the lower right corner of that, there's configure GNOME GTK application style, and that, it's a pretty minimal appearance, but it gives you a choice. It gives you exactly one choice. It says GTK theme to use, and you can choose which GTK theme to use. You can use Adwaita, which is the default GNOME one. There's Breeze, there's Emacs, Greybird Dark, High Contrast, and so on. I have mine set to Adwaita, and it is, it's working fine for me. I've never noticed that it doesn't follow my dark theme. There is an Adwaita Dark, so you'd kind of almost think that I should have that selected. I don't. Maybe I'm just not using, like, quote-unquote, enough GTK applications, I'm not sure, but I don't know, I've never noticed an inconsistency on Slackware. Now, this used to be kind of a bigger deal on Slackware, or on KDE and on Slackware, because it didn't auto-configure this for you, so you could run KDE on Slackware and just have no GTK theming whatsoever, and it used to be a little bit of, you know, it would cause some confusion, I think, for some new Slackers, so you would have to install a GTK theme engine, is what it was, a Qt-GTK-engine or something like that, or GTK Qt engine. No, it was Qt GTK engine. And then you could use something like GTK theme or GTK, there was another one, something or another, GTK RC something, I don't know. And then you could tell it what GTK theme to use within KDE, and that was quite nice. And I think it did show up in your system settings still. It was just an extra thing that you had to install, if I recall correctly. I used to install it from Slack builds, so yeah, I guess it must have been an extra thing that you had to install. And as long as you set that, then all your GTK would look beautiful. But if you didn't know to install the Qt GTK engine, then all your GTK apps looked like Windows 95 apps, and it was really frustrating. And really, I mean, honestly, we should have coffee. We should have had coffee probably quite a while ago. Let's stop, have a cup of coffee, then we'll come back and finish up the show. And we're back. You have coffee. I've got my second cup of coffee. The next one on the list is KDebug Settings. It is a very specific application that does exactly one thing, and that is that it configures debug settings for a bunch of KDE modules. You can enable full debug, you can disable full debug, or you can control the debug mode, for instance, full info, warning, critical, or off. I don't use the debug in KDE. You probably honestly don't either, because, I mean, at least if you're running Slackware KDE, then the debug functionality is only of limited use to you. I mean, it could be useful for you personally, but if you're doing this to report a bug or something, they're honestly just going to tell you to update KDE to something recent and run a debug on, or try to duplicate the bug that you've run into. So there's not a whole lot to do with debugging reports on what is considered an old version of KDE. And that's just, I mean, you're running Slackware, so you're running something that is not keeping up with the most recent versions of things on purpose. You're doing that for stability, so the KDebug option probably doesn't do you a whole lot of good. So yeah, you're probably not going to run it. But if you are, then that's one way to activate and deactivate debug modes for KDE. Kdeclarative is an integration for QML and KDE workspaces. It comprises of two parts, a library used by C++, part of your application, to integrate QML with KDE framework-specific features, and a series of QML imports that offer bindings to some of the frameworks. So this is a development thing, and it's got a lot to do with something called QML, which is, it stands for, what does it stand for? I just looked this up because I can't ever remember what the Q stands for. Cute, simply enough. Cute Meta Object Language, QML. And what that is essentially is it is a JavaScript parser, I guess, or library, so that you can write JavaScript and then end up with a Qt application. It's kind of amazing, to be honest. And you can test it out if you get the Qt develop application, or rather Qt creator, sorry, Kdevelop, Qt creator, or I think it might be in Kdevelop as well. You can utilize QML, otherwise known as JavaScript. I mean, that's what you'll be writing. It's sort of a cross almost in a sense of CSS and JavaScript, but you can write this stuff using specific, you know, classes and IDs and things like that, and control the look and feel of your Qt application, of the Qt application that you're creating. So it's a powerful scripting option for developing stuff that otherwise you'd have to be using C++ potentially to author an application in. And I think that's a huge, huge deal. I think it's a big deal to be able to just use essentially a scripting language, JavaScript, to compose a full-featured desktop application. Now, this is, you know, similar in a way, I guess, in spirit, to PySide and PyQt and things like that, where you can use Python to integrate or to create a fully functioning desktop application, and so on. So there are definite parallels there. I would say probably QML is a little more integrated into the Qt system than even the PySide stuff, interestingly, or PyQt, whatever. Kind of is surprising to me, because Python is such a popular force of programming that you would think that there would be greater integration. Although, from what I can tell nowadays, at least on Slackware, I feel like it's pretty well integrated already, like the PyQt stuff. I could be making that up. Let's just try it. Import PyQt. No. Import PyQt 5. No. Import PySide. Okay, yeah, so I'm wrong. I was making that up. I thought I'd come across a PyQt application and it had just worked, and I thought maybe that meant it had been better integrated. Maybe I'm making that up. But QML is well integrated. I mean, it is part of Qt. It is an official part of Qt. So if you want to break out some JavaScript code and write an application, you can do that. There are, you know, little limitations here and there. I mean, you don't have the full breadth of everything that you have access to in C++, which, I mean, you know, if you're not going to use those options, then it doesn't really matter. And I think that's the idea. So you can write JavaScript if you know your way around web development and a little bit of programming, then you kind of know your way around QML, honestly. It uses a subsystem called Qt Quick, and that is available since I feel like the mid 4.0 releases of Qt. And of course, we're up to, well, who knows what we're up to now, but for Slackware's purposes, we can say safely that we're up to Qt 5. And so you can use your JavaScript knowledge to create widgets or to reuse existing widgets, to theme them, to position them within a window, to detect mouse events, and all of that stuff. And more, a lot more stuff, because QML just, it has knowledge of the whole Qt system. So you can use libraries that, again, in theory, you should only be really sort of having access to if you're writing C++, but because you're tapping into Qt Quick, you can use a lot more than you'd have access to normally with just, you know, just JavaScript or just even just Python, really. You've got quite a lot of integration there. And K-Declarative helps ensure that all of this QML stuff also has access to the KDE framework itself, which is important if you're doing a KDE application. There is a application that I've been using a lot lately that was written in QML. So if you want to see this in action, check out Elisa, E-L-I-S-A. It's a media player, and that was done with QML. You see some of the weaknesses of it probably because it's not a very configurable application. Like, it's kind of, it has a feeling of being hard-coded, and I don't know how much of that is QML and how much of it's just a design choice, sort of like, well, this is my application and this is how you're going to use it. That seems atypical of a KDE application to me. So I don't know, you know, how much of that is sort of, this is what you get with QML, and how much of it is just kind of someone saying, well, this is the application that I'm delivering. I just don't know. So, I mean, it does claim, you know, it does use KDE libraries and so on. So, I mean, I have a feeling that it is probably possibly a QML limitation, in terms of like how limited it is that you could, you know, you really don't have a whole lot of control over the layout of Elisa like you did, for instance, for Amarok, or even for something like Jook, which you have a pretty, that's pretty flexible. So that's just an example. I don't know how useful it is because, like I say, I haven't really used QML myself, so I don't know what the limitation is on the technological side versus on development choice side. But QML is definitely something to check out if you're looking to start with desktop applications. I mean, it's not, it isn't exactly like writing JavaScript because you do have to have an awareness that there are a bunch of libraries underneath what you're doing, and you have to know and understand how to access those through QML, not just through, you know, what you would think of as normal JavaScript. But that said, that there are a lot of similarities there. All right, so that was K-Declarative. Very cool. And then the next one, and the one that we'll probably end on here, is KDE Connect. This is a much-loved application by everyone I've ever talked to who uses Linux and has a mobile phone and uses KDE. And it's one of those things that I feel like for a lot of people, it's one of the lures of KDE. Like if you're not sure if you want to use KDE, just on the fence, KDE Connect seems to be one of those things that kind of definitely convinces some people. And it is such a nice application. So KDE Connect connects your mobile phone, as long as you have KDE Connect, the KDE Connect app installed on your mobile phone, then you can connect it over your wireless connection or your wired connection, your local network, to your KDE desktop. It has an odd assortment of things that it can do, and I feel like it's an odd assortment that you'll either think, you know, that you might just kind of ignore five of them and absolutely rely on two of them or whatever. So the odd assortment includes, well, I guess I'll start with the strongest, which is send files. If you want to send a file from your mobile phone to your KDE desktop, just use KDE Connect. It is so easy to do. You click on send files, you select the files that you want to send to your KDE desktop, and it receives them. It's just that easy. Now, of course, you have to marry the you have to like join these things, and the way that you do that is either KDE Connect in your application window, or just go to system settings, because ultimately that's where this little panel shows up. And in settings, I feel like it probably has its own little panel. Yeah, KDE Connect has its own little panel. So you go there, you add your device to this system setting panel, and you can choose what your phone and your desktop sort of have access to together. So for instance, there are lots of plugins for KDE Connect. There's a battery monitor, so that you can monitor your phone battery next to your computer battery. I don't have that on mine because I don't have a battery on my computer, first of all, but also I don't really care about my phone battery right now because I'm just at home. I'll plug it in if it gets low. Big screen plug-in, clipboard plug-in. You can share your clipboard, connectivity monitor, share your contacts, and so on. It just goes on and on. So there's a bunch of plugins that you can do that you can have between your phone and your desktop. And on your app, on the phone, you can send files, you can use your phone as a slideshow remote. So, I mean, I've never done that, but I imagine that would be very useful for some people. Multimedia control, I actually use this one a lot because I'm often playing music on my desktop, but sometimes I'll step out of the room and I'll think, oh, I should pause my music, or maybe the music isn't playing and I'll think, oh, I'm in a different room, I should have some background music, and so I'll start my music playing, and so on. Remote input, that's a crazy one. You can actually use your phone essentially as a trackpad for your mouse on your desktop. You just use it really like a trackpad, like a remote mouse over a network. You can also run a command. So, you know, run an arbitrary command on your desktop from your mobile. This is kind of, I mean, in terms of integration with a desktop, it's kind of a game changer. It's a big deal. It makes things really, really simple. It makes your life a lot simpler because you don't really have to think about how you're going to get that file from your phone to your desktop. And there's no wonky kind of like synchronization thing. You know, the phone and the desktop don't have to always be aware of each other. They can be if you want them to be, but they don't have to be. So it's just a utility app. You get to do the things that you want to do. And that's nice. It's a really nice application. And I think in a lot of ways, it just solves the problem of having a mobile phone and a desktop that are really just egregiously not communicative, typically. I mean, mobiles really annoy me. They don't integrate nearly as much with your personal life as they ought to. They tend to try to keep your information as far away out of your hands as possible, even though you're literally holding it in your hand. It wants you to go through some online service to access your data, and that's just so frustrating. But with KDE Connect, you can juggle files back and forth, and obviously it does go both ways. Well, not obviously, it does go both ways. You can be on your desktop and choose, certainly within Dolphin, right click on something, and there's a menu selection right there. It's just its own little menu selection that says, let me read it, send to, and then your device with KDE Connect. And it's that easy to send a file from your desktop to your phone, and then accordingly it is that easy over on your phone side to send a file to your desktop. So it's a really, really great little utility, and it just kind of sneaks up on you. It's surprisingly effective. It just does things that, I mean, ought to be really obvious and simple anyway, but are not. Phone manufacturers just didn't design their devices to be useful or to be convenient, and this hacks around that in a really, really elegant way. And all it is just one little app on your phone, KDE Connect, which you can get through F-Droid if you prefer, or you can download the APK from KDE directly, or it's probably available in whatever app store you do use. And then you've got that, you can have that talking to your KDE desktop, and it's brilliant. There's just, and there's no reason to think that there won't be yet more plugins available in the future. This is really really quite nice. Oh, there's a Find Your Device plugin as well, so you can play a sound on your device. If you've misplaced it in your house, you can possibly locate it through sound. Again, just triggering that through your desktop. You cannot find your desktop through your phone, though. That's a big drawback. So if you misplace your desktop computer, your phone will not, even with KDE Connect, will not be able to help you find it. Okay, and hopefully that's not actually a problem for you. Okay, that's, I think, everything that I have to talk about in this episode that got us up to KDE Connect. So next up will be KDecoration, KDE-D, KDE-EDU, KDE Graphics, and so on. So we're getting there. We're getting through some of these KDE applications. Hopefully this has been informative and useful. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.